This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, September 5th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle.
NOARC, Northwest Arkansas Human Resource Association, presents Managers Conference, the Building Blocks of Leadership and Management, next Thursday, September 12th, at the Springdale Holiday Inn. This conference is designed for all levels of management, from manufacturing to small business. Registration information available online at noark.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a report on former President Bill Clinton's address yesterday about the Affordable Care Act. He made it from his presidential library in Little Rock.
And it's just like riding a bike. If you haven't ridden since your childhood days, we visit a local bike shop to see what it takes to get back on one.
Those stories and more, but first, Arkansas revenue collections for last month are reported to have been above forecast by 1.5%. The Department of Finance and Administration reports this morning that net available revenue for the month of August added up to more than $387 million, indicating an extra $5.7 million than previously estimated. State economist John Shelnut says the increase is largely due to money from tax payments.
August results were boosted by one-time sales tax audit payments, and better-than-expected corporate income tax collections. Weakness in individual income tax partially offset these increases.
However, Shelnut says more numbers may be required to fully assess some smaller reasons for the increase.
I think it will take additional reporting periods to determine whether this weakness is part of a trend or a temporary payroll timing issue.
Arkansas has already collected nearly $800 million for the fiscal year, which is also above the forecast by 1.7%.
A state-level effort to limit corporate contributions to campaigns got underway today. The group Regnant Populous, which has presented other ethics reform proposals in the past, submitted a proposed ballot measure to Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel this morning. It would bar corporations, either formed in Arkansas or elsewhere, from contributing to political campaigns. The draft ballot question would prohibit corporations from contributing to political action committees, ballot question committees, political parties, and other groups. And it would also prevent corporations from purchasing advertising within 60 days of an election that advocates for a particular candidate or ballot issue. Paul Spencer, co-chair of Regnant Populous and a civics teacher at Little Rock Catholic High, says the most important part of the proposed ballot initiative is that it seeks to remove the millions of dollars in corporate spending on local, state, and federal elections in Arkansas.
When you look back at 2008, President Obama's campaign expended nearly $1 billion in their efforts to get President Obama into the White House. So that's an extreme example, but if you go through and look at some of our local elections and our statewide elections and so forth, there's just an obscene amount of money being spent. And one of the primary reasons we launched our last ethics campaign in 2012 and worked with the legislature in this last year to get the comprehensive ethics amendment referred over to the voters is to try to start taking some of that money out of the system.
Spencer says the initiative forwarded to the state attorney general's office this morning is the result of a partnership with a number of national organizations.
Common Cause, Free Speech for People, and Public Citizen, and all of those groups were very instrumental in getting legislation put forth in places like Colorado, Montana. I think currently they're working on something like 16 different states right now. Many of them passed resolutions asking and instructing the congressional delegations to put forth an amendment to the United States Constitution that will achieve the same goals that we're trying to here in Arkansas now.
Spencer says the issue of corporate campaign funding, as allowed by the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in the Citizens United case, is an issue of both national and state importance. And Arkansans should have the ability to regulate how campaign finance money should be spent in the state. But before voters can decide on the ballot initiative, it must pass muster by the state's attorney general.
Development of the Watershed Sanctuary in Cave Springs means Lake Keith will soon be drained. Delia Hawk, director of the Illinois River Watershed Partnership, one of the organizations developing the sanctuary, says the draining of the lake will begin in about a month because this time of year is opportune for such work because of relatively low lake levels and relatively low rainfall expectation. She says draining the lake will allow workers to address algae issues and make other improvements.
It's something that in an impoundment of this size at about 6 acres we're able to do. It's a shallow lake, and that's one of the reasons why algae is kind of a nuisance. And we can do things that will improve that, give the lake bed a longer life by draining it, letting it dry out, treating it with alum. During that time, we'll be working to build a fishing pier and boardwalk and do restoration around the lake shore.
Hawk says while the lake is down, crews will also remove the remnants of a concrete raceway impoundment structure that was used as part of a hatchery many years ago. She says when the control gate is opened and the lake shrinks to a stream, Arkansas Game and Fish officials will ensure that the fish population living in the lake will not be at risk.
What we understand from Fisheries Division is that most of the fish will go through just as they're draining the lake onto the south side of the lake. It drains into Osage Creek, and the fisheries division from the hatchery will come with seining nets and help rescue any fish that might get left behind, and they'll put them over into Osage Creek.
Though there will be a slight rise in water level downstream during the draining process, Hawk says estimates show that Osage Creek shouldn't rise more than what normally occurs after a typical rainfall. She says Lake Keith could remain drained for a period of anywhere from 12 to 15 months.
Six Arkansas counties affected by severe storms and flooding in August will receive federal disaster aid after President Obama approved a disaster declaration for those areas. The disaster declaration makes FEMA funding available for repair work in Benton, Boone, Carroll, Madison, Marion, and Newton counties. The declaration also makes funding available for hazard mitigation measures across Arkansas. Condoleezza Rice will be the featured speaker this spring at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville during the university's annual Distinguished Lecture Series. Rice served as Secretary of State under former President George W. Bush. After leaving Washington, Secretary Rice returned to teach political science and business at Stanford University. The lecture will take place March 5th at Barnhill Arena. And though the event is free and open to the public, tickets will be required to attend.
The Razorback women's soccer team yesterday continued its undefeated season with a 1-0 win over the Tulsa Golden Hurricanes. The lone goal came from freshman Alexandra Fisher after more than an hour of play. Not only did the goal win the match, but it was also Fisher's first goal of her career. Now 5-0 in the season, the Razorbacks will be home Sunday to host Nebraska. And the 3-1 Razorback volleyball team will host Kansas at 7 tonight inside Barnhill Arena. Kansas and Arkansas have identical 3-1 records, and tonight's match is the first in a home-and-home series against KU. The Razorbacks will travel to Lawrence to play the other half of the series on Saturday.
Tonight's forecast calls for mostly clear skies with overnight lows from 57 in northwest Arkansas to 63 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Friday, sunny with highs from 90 to 95. Tomorrow evening, clear with overnight lows from 58 to 65.
This is Ozarks at Large. On June 15, 2012, President Obama announced that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security would stop deporting hundreds of thousands of young people brought into the U.S. by family members illegally. These youth, DHS further announced, could also apply for deferred action for childhood arrival status, entitling them to temporary employment authorization cards, government-issued IDs, and driver's licenses. So far, thousands of undocumented Arkansas youth have been granted relief under the program. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to Fort Smith to meet one of them.
Dean's Carpets, how can I help you?
Cindy Perez answers the phone at Dean's Discount Carpets on Kelly Highway in Fort Smith this morning. She works here full-time in the front office and attends college. But just a year ago, this Northside High School graduate had zero options. Her situation traces back to when her family brought her across the U.S. border from Mexico when she was just a toddler.
My family came to the United States when I was 2 years old, We lived in a small town in the state of Guanajuato. We've lived in Fort Smith, Arkansas since then. They basically came here in search of a better life.
Guanajuato is one of 31 sovereign states comprising the Mexican Republic and is located in central Mexico. Both Cindy's parents are in the process of securing their work visas, and Cindy's two siblings were born here, so are U.S. citizens. But for her, she was undocumented, and things looked bleak. That is until last June, when she heard President Barack Obama announce that hundreds of thousands of undocumented young people like herself could apply for temporary work authorization credentials under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, DACA for short.
It was the most exciting day of my life. It really was. I thought, yay, finally, I'll be able to get a job, I'll be able to drive, I'll be able to go to school and get my Social Security number and live my life like everybody else.
Although the deferment process is complex and deferments are limited, the family encouraged her to apply right away.
So yeah, it was available August the 15th, and I submitted my application August the 15th. And in 2 months, I received my work permit in the mail, and I was extremely excited. The next day, I went to the Social Security office where I applied for a Social Security number. And as soon as I got my Social Security number, I went to take my driver's test, and I got my driver's license, and it was on from there.
Cindy had to pay a $465 application fee, plus she had to prove that she's lived in the United States at least 6 years, arriving before her 16th birthday, was born after 1981, was attaining an education or military record, and had no criminal record. It's a lot of paperwork for individuals who are demographically invisible. But as soon as she got her work authorization card...
Oh, not long at all. John told me, as soon as you get your Social Security number, come here and we'll fill out an application.
She's talking about John Paul Dean, her new boss. They met several years ago at Christ the King Catholic Church.
She does a fantastic job.
John Paul Dean inherited the carpet store from his father, who established the business in 1966. And he's made a practice to employ individuals seeking to rebuild their lives. But he had no idea so many undocumented families were living in Arkansas. That is until a man who spoke no English showed up at his business 5 years ago looking for work.
There was a young lady who came into the store with her father, and she was acting as his translator, and he wanted to have a job working here at the store.
He soon learned the family had no papers. He couldn't hire the father legally, but made the decision, after learning her story, to provide a scholarship to the daughter to attend college. He's helped others as well. John Paul Dean says he's politically independent and not an activist.
However, I have strong views that about things. I think that the immigration laws need to be changed to allow people that are talented and qualified to come in.
Because, he says, the American economy needs people who want to work, especially those who risk their lives crossing the border in search of a job. Cindy Perez, who's turned 20, is working full-time, plus she's enrolled part-time at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith studying accounting. But in 2 years, her special immigration status will expire, nor does it convey a path to lawful permanent resident status or U.S. citizenship.
And after 2 years, we'll be eligible to reapply. And hopefully they will allow us to continue reapplying for it, or actually get some kind of immigration reform going.
Which is currently stalled in Congress, says Maria Reith, co-founder and executive director of the Arkansas United Community Coalition. Reith, who was recently honored by the White House for her work on comprehensive immigration reform, has been encouraging young people across Arkansas to secure DACA status, including Cindy Perez.
Well, for us here in Arkansas, the most recent statistics show that about 3,606 Youth from Arkansas have applied for a deferred action for childhood arrivals, and approximately 2,760 of those have been approved. Our approval rate for Arkansas is 76.5%, which is in the top third of the national median, a number that we're very proud of. And the states, just to give you a sense of the range of states, there are states where less than 50% are actually getting approved. And what this means is that this program really is addressing a very tangible need for Arkansas youth and benefiting directly our state in a very real way. That said, we believe that there are still about 9,000 eligible youth for DACA, some not quite as of yet. There's about 2,000 to 3,000 of those that have yet to hit the 15-age minimum, but will be eligible within the next year.
Of the estimated 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States, as many as 2 million are young people. In Arkansas, Mireya Wright has been working in coalition with other advocates to locate and assist them in the complex application process for deferment.
Where youth could connect with attorneys and train volunteers to get support. We also have to applaud really Catholic Charities, Arkansas Justice for Our Neighbors, Arkansas Coalition for Dream, amongst other nonprofits that supported that effort.
And although there's a long way to go, Wright says the success stories are really something.
We've been really excited to see a full range of employment being extended to our DACA youth at restaurants, or within the food industry. But then we've seen several of our youth actually be very quickly picked up by very specialized industries such as doctors, psychologists, businesses, corporations, because they have long had a shortage of bilingual individuals, talented individuals.
And for Cindy Perez, her deferment is also a political action, allowing her to step further out of the shadows as a, quote, dreamer, one who supports comprehensive immigration reform for undocumented youth.
Right now, we're working towards informing our community of immigrant rights. And also, we have a couple of projects where we want to get the Hispanic community more involved in education.
And now, with her changed status, Cindy Perez plans to settle in Fort Smith.
My dream is to become an accountant and have several rental properties.
And she'll likely get an excellent deal on flooring. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
In June, the U.S. Senate, by a 68-32 vote, passed, for the first time in a generation, a sweeping immigration reform bill titled the Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act. The measure is now before a majority Republican U.S. House.
A new report indicates Arkansas ranks as the state with the highest percentage of its people over 60 who faced the threat of hunger in 2011, the most recent year for which data is available. The report was released by the National Foundation to End Senior Hunger. Enid Borden is the founder and CEO of the foundation and is with me on the phone. Ms. Borden, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, Kyle, thanks so much for having me.
This study suggests over 24% of Arkansans 60 or over faced the threat of hunger in 2011. It's nearly a quarter of that age group. That strikes me as a very high number.
It is a high number, and I'm sorry to even have to report it to you. You know, we always want to be number one, but not on this list. And there are lots of issues in Arkansas that need to be addressed. And I will tell you the good news is that you've got some wonderful programs in Arkansas that are working very hard on it. And this is really, as I said, it's not the kind of list you want to be on, and the numbers are getting worse and worse and worse, and it's not good. But a lot can be done, a lot will be done, and your numbers there have increased terribly, and that's why I wanted to talk today. I want to talk to your listeners about what they can do to do something about this, and that's the good news. There is something we can do about it.
I want to ask you about that in a minute. First, let's define a term. What does threat of hunger refer to?
It refers to the fact that on any given day, in this case a senior, thinks that maybe tomorrow I might not have a meal. You know, one of the things, and this is, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is something that really does need to be discussed. What's the difference between hungry and hunger? And there's a huge difference, and that's what we ought to be talking about in America. If we're hungry, and you and I are hungry every day, and we say, I'm hungry, and many times we say, I'm starving to death. The good news is nothing could be further from the truth. But if you're hungry, the way to solve that is to feed you. And once I feed you, you're no longer hungry. But that didn't stop hunger. Hunger is a long-term problem, and it can't be resolved overnight, but it can be resolved when and if we start talking about it as a problem and looking for solutions. So there is a huge difference between hungry and hunger. Very, very important that we begin the discussion about the difference between hungry and hunger.
This is, obviously, you said that there is no overnight fix, but this is solvable?
Yeah, it really is solvable. The first way we solve it is to have discussions like we're having right now. People in this country are amazed to find that anybody is hungry in this country, but even more so that senior citizens are going hungry. When we think about hunger, we did a study, a very kind of a man-on-the-street study, if you will, a couple years ago, and we asked people about hunger in America, and most people said there is no hunger in America. When we're talking about hunger, we're talking about third-world nations. Well, of course, that could be no further from the truth. We do have hunger in America. And then when you drill down and you ask people about hungry old people, people shake their heads and say, nope, can't happen. Well, in fact, it does. Our latest findings, which is what we're talking about today, show that we're talking about 8.8 million senior citizens who are, in fact, facing the threat of hunger. That's an enormous amount of people.
Nearly 9 million people. You say the conversation is a start. I would imagine there has to be more than conversation. Are you suggesting policy change? What else can...
I'm suggesting a lot of things. I'm suggesting that we do need to look at our policies in America. Who is being fed now? With the programs we have, who is being fed? Are we feeding the most vulnerable? We also look at how we volunteer. I know that a lot of programs are strapped just to get volunteers. We need more people to volunteer. We need people to realize that, you know, if I'm going to go eat lunch today and I'm going to spend $5 on lunch, maybe I ought to take another $2, $3, maybe $5 and go to a local food bank, go to a local food pantry, go to a soup kitchen, go to a Meals on Wheels program, donate some money, donate your money, donate your time. And then the other thing is I'd like people to donate their brains. Let's have a conversation. Let's have people talk to us. Come to our website, www.nefesh, N-F-E-S-H, and give us your ideas. How do we solve hunger? Another thing I want to talk about, which is really a fascinating thing, on the one hand, in this country, we've got hunger. On the other hand, we've got obesity. We've got an interesting situation going on in America today. We've got people who are obese and people who are hungry. We've got to get together and talk. We've also got food waste in this country. It's estimated that 30 to 50% of the food that's produced in this country never reaches a human stomach. There is so much waste that we could be using to feed people. And if we can get more food to our table, we can feed people. Not just feed people. Guess what? We can end hunger. And that's what we need to be doing. We need to begin a conversation, and we need to begin a rethinking. If we saved some of this food that's going to waste, 20 pounds of food per person per month is going to waste, the equivalent of $165 billion a year that we're wasting. That's where we need policy change. That's where we need to rethink. That's where we need to refigure how we do this. We've got enough food in this country to feed every man, woman, and child, and yet we've got hunger. Something's got to change. We've got to shake it up. We've got to rethink, reinvigorate, and rededicate ourselves that nobody should go hungry in this country.
You mentioned that the numbers have gotten worse for Arkansas. I think that's the case for much of the South. In the last 10 years, the percentage of people 16 over who are in the threat of hunger has actually gone up.
Yes, that's right. I mean, for all different reasons. The good news is we're getting older. The bad news is we're getting older. Mm. We're living longer. But it's the question of what's the quality of that life? If I'm going to live longer and I'm going to be miserable and I'm going to be hungry and I'm going to suffer all sorts of maladies, what kind of a life are we living? You know, we've been talking about this period, this 10-year period that's gotten worse and worse. I call it the decade of shame. We ought to be ashamed of ourselves. We can do much better in this country, and we ought to be doing much better. And we've got to start today, not tomorrow. Not the day after. We've got to start today. We've got to start thinking about what do we do as a nation? Why is there so much obesity and so much hunger? Why is there so much food waste? This is an urgent issue, and it's urgent on a national level, and it's urgent on a statewide level.
A surprising statistic, this is nationwide, this is not just Arkansas, but according to the report, 60% of the seniors who faced the threat of hunger in 2011 were between the ages of 60 and 69.
Yeah, and that's the most astounding thing. When we think about aging and hunger, we think about, 85 and older. No, you're exactly right. Our study indicates that those who are suffering the most are those young boomers, those aged 60 to 69. And we're talking about grandparents who live with grandchildren. We're talking about women. We're talking about poor and near poor. And we're talking about African-American seniors and Hispanic seniors. So we know the targets. We know where the hunger numbers are. And now the question is, what are we going to do about it? Just knowing about these numbers, just knowing where the people are, is one thing. What are we going to do about it? And remember, too, that those living in the South and Southwest are more at risk, which is why I'm not surprised about Arkansas, but I'm chagrined about it.
You know, when every year the kids count comes out from the report from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, and it lists how children are doing in the country state by state in a number of areas. And I know certain states have looked and said, we're last here in maybe pre-K or health care. And they'll examine what states are high and what they've done. Do you hope that states like Arkansas, Mississippi, and Alabama, the three worst when it comes to the percentage, kind of try to see what Virginia, Minnesota, North Dakota, and New Hampshire are doing to have such a lower percentage?
Kyle, you're exactly right. That's what my foundation is trying to do. We want to work with these states. We want to all get together and say, how can you folks in Arkansas be anywhere near the folks in Virginia? What Virginia doesn't have any secret that Arkansas doesn't have, but let's talk about what we do together. How do we do that? I happen to live right here in the state of Virginia. Maybe that's why they're number one. But they're doing something right. So let's see what they're doing right and how we can replicate that in the state of Arkansas. Why should Minnesota and Virginia be so much better, you're exactly right, than Arkansas and Mississippi? What do we do? How do we all work together? And I believe it's a statewide issue. I think that we want to work community by community. We need to work with the folks in Fayetteville. We need to work with the folks in Bentonville. We need to work with the folks in Pine Bluff. What do we do together to figure out how we do this on a community by community basis and a statewide basis? Arkansas needs to do better. Arkansas can do better. And I know that Arkansans can do better because they want to. First is getting the issue out there, knowing that, in fact, it exists, that the state of Arkansas is number one, should be the clarion call that Arkansans can do better and should do better.
Enid Borden is the founder and CEO of the National Foundation to End Senior Hunger. The foundation issued a report last week placing Arkansas as the state with the highest percentage of people 60 and over who faced the threat of hunger in 2011. Ms. Borden, thank you for your time.
Kyle, thank you so much.
My gut told me that Hopwood was a punk.
In 1999, Judge Richard Kupf sentenced Sean Hopwood to 12 years for robbing banks.
I had committed some pretty serious crimes, and I deserved to go to prison.
There, Sean Hopwood learned to love the law, how a one-time punk became a prestigious law clerk. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, beginning this afternoon at 3 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The White House is enlisting former President Bill Clinton to help build support for the federal health care law as a key phase of the reform nears on October 1st. As KUAR's Michael Hiblin reports, yesterday the former president made a detailed argument from his Little Rock Presidential Library for why the federal law needs to be implemented.
Speaking to an invitation-only crowd at the Clinton Presidential Center, the former president said opponents of the Affordable Care Act have been effective at building opposition to the law.
I'm still amazed at how much misunderstanding there is about the current system of health care, how it works, how it compares with what other people in other countries pay for health care and what kind of results they get, and what changes are actually occurring now and are going to occur in the future.
Former President Clinton said any time you work on an issue as complex as health care reform, there will be problems. But he's urging opponents of the law to work with supporters so the benefits of expanding coverage can be realized.
We're going to do better working together and learning together than we will trying over and over again to repeal the law are rooting for reform to fail.
Clinton called Arkansas an example of how Democrats and Republicans can work together to craft a compromise. The private option, which passed the legislature earlier this year, will allow Medicaid dollars to be used to buy private insurance. He believes lawmakers in Washington should also work together to reach an agreeable solution.
So far, the direst predictions for the adverse consequences have not materialized, and I don't believe they will. Now, this law has already done a lot of good. It's about to make 95% of us insured with access to affordable care. It has built-in incentives to lower costs and improve quality, including lots of opportunities for states to innovate, and Arkansas is Exhibit A. And you should all be very proud of what your representatives and your governor have done.
Clinton's speech was the first in a series by Obama administration officials and allies defending the law before the October 1st open enrollment for insurance exchanges under the law. Michael Heplin, KUAR News.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring retail suppliers, including packaging specialists, printing and graphic services, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and more information available by calling 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com.
The Fort Smith Regional Art Museum has an open call for works. There is a deadline associated with this. It's Sunday, October 13th for drop-offs, Monday, October 14th for mailed works. What does your idea of hope look like? That's what they're interested in. The Fort Smith Regional Art Museum is partnering with the Ozark affiliate of Susan G. Coleman. This invitational is open to artists of all ages, of all backgrounds, and artistic ability. Submissions can be by any media. All works will be part of a silent auction that will take place on the evening of Thursday, October 24th from 5 until 7. Works will be on view at the Regional Art Museum, or RAM, through the end of November. The exhibit is a fundraiser, and all proceeds from sales will benefit the Ozark affiliate of Susan G. Coleman, as well as the educational programs at the RAM. Submissions must include this: the artist's name and contact information, the title of the work, the year it was created, the media, dimensions of work, and a one-paragraph description about how this work communicates the artist's idea of hope.
And the Walton Arts Center is seeking proposals from visual and performing artists as part of the 2014 Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival. The 2014 Artisphere Partner Grant Program has a total of $20,000 to be awarded among 1 to 5 grant winners. The goal is to find work that supports the mission and theme of Artisphere and engages the community. The deadline for submission is November 1st, 2013. The award announcement will be made December 1st. For more information on the application criteria, visit artisphere festival.org/get involved. Last year's grant recipients were Tasha Lewis for The Herd and The Swarm, and Craig Colarusso for Sunboxes.
Support for KUAF comes from Mason Creek Farm, offering certified animal welfare-approved pork from naturally raised hogs. Pastured on 60 acres in the Boston Mountains, their own line of heritage animals are supplemented with whole grains and organic minerals. Photos, recipes, and more available at masoncreekfarm.com.
In Northwest Arkansas, local residents can often sample tasty treats for a good cause. One example is Savor the Flavor, a fundraising event for Washington Regional's volunteer-based organization, Faith in Action. The event, which took place Tuesday night, allowed participants to sample a variety of foods from Dixon Street restaurants. Your next chance to taste delicious delicacies for a good cause will be September 12th at Chefs in the Garden. The annual Botanical Garden of the Ozarks fundraiser will feature food prepared by local chefs.
If you feel the need for exercise after indulging in the offerings, you're in luck. There are plenty of active fundraisers scheduled throughout September as well. These events include walks for ALS and Alzheimer's disease, as well as the annual Run for Every Chris, the charity challenge of champions. an event now in its 22nd year, supports the Arkansas Crisis Center and Crisis Center Foundation. The multi-day event includes tennis and golf, as well as social events. Next weekend, a LifeSource International event will give participants the chance to show their support by hiking or riding a bike. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
LifeSource International is a Fayetteville-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to give a hand up, not just a hand out. According to its website, LifeSource uses a holistic approach to help people in need through a variety of programs and services, such as a clothing pantry, food storehouse, counseling services, and medical care assistance. September 14th, the organization will host its annual Hike or Bike Against Hunger fundraising event. Participants will meet at Panera Bread in Fayetteville and use the Mud Creek and Skull Creek trails. With the expansion of the trail system throughout Northwest Arkansas, it's becoming more and more common to see people riding their bikes. If I want to become one of those bicycling residents, how do I know what kind of bike I need? A good place to start looking for assistance is a local bike shop.
Yes. Hi, what's your name?
Carolyn.
Carolyn, hi, I'm Ben. Give me just a minute, I'll be right with you. Are y'all looking at the right stuff?
She's definitely a medium, Bruce. Yeah.
Okay.
Ben Upchurch is the owner of the bike route in Fayetteville. The shop is located near Panera Bread and is one of the sponsors of LifeSource's upcoming fundraiser. Ben's shop has been open for more than 3 years, and he says the first thing he asks customers is what they're going to do on their bike. Based on that, Ben will direct them to one of three types of bicycles.
The road bike is your old school 10-speed you may have heard of as a kid. It's the curved, dropped three-position handlebars with, you know, these days 20 to 22 gears. That's for longer distance, higher mileage, lightweight performance. A mountain bike is meant to tackle trails on the mountain, dirt, rocks, roots. A hybrid is our bread and butter as far as quantity of bikes we sell. And a hybrid has the gearing of a mountain bike, so it's really easy to get up hills, but you still have the ability to go fast on a flat road. But it has the lightweight attributes like a road bike. With thinner tires, it doesn't have suspension on it normally, so it's a lighter bike. So it's a hybrid of the mountain and the road bike. So most of our bikes throughout the year, we're going to sell a hybrid bike. That's kind of our bread and butter, like any bike store's bread and butter. But, you know, most people don't want to do the Tour de France, and most people don't want to go downhill on a mountain bike. So the hybrid is kind of definitely our number one seller.
Once you've found the proper type of bike to suit your needs, you need to find a bike that's the right fit. Ben explains that bicycles come in different sizes to accommodate people of different heights.
The worst thing a person can do is spend a lot of money on a bike that doesn't fit them. We take a lot of time and make sure that you, the customer, you could buy this green Bronson here, but it comes in five different sizes, and we want to make sure you're on the right size. Once we determine your size, no matter what kind of bike it is, a hybrid, a road, or mountain, we're going to get you on our fitting area, get you on the bike on a stationary trainer, and measure your knee angle when it's at the bottom of the pedal stroke. That determines your saddle height very accurately. So we've got a way to measure that. And then we're going to determine the stretch, the distance from the handlebars to the saddle, to make sure you're not stretched out too far or you don't have the handlebars too close to you. So as important as it is to be on the right size bike, it's even more important to be fitted correctly on the right size bike. So, for instance, a road bike for us, once the purchase is done, we want you to spend about 30 minutes with us after the purchase to get the bike on the trainer and to get you dialed in completely. That way, when you leave the door, you've got everything you need to do. You're fitted on the bike, you're outfitted correctly, and everything's set up for you from day one.
Once you have a bike and begin riding it, it's important to conduct routine maintenance to keep the bicycle in good shape.
We talk to everybody like they're buying a car. It's a machine with moving parts, so maintain it. If you don't maintain it, it's going to fall apart on you. So we offer, not to go into the sales spiel, but we offer free adjustments to shifting and brakes, the most commonly worn out or commonly misaligned parts on the bike. We also promote getting a full tune-up done at least once a year, depending on how much you ride. The average person once a year. Me, I do a complete tune-up on my bike probably once every 6 months. But you want to go over all the moving parts, make sure they're working as best they can depending on the condition. You may have to replace things here and there. But a tune-up gets everything clean and working properly and would reveal things that need to be replaced. But for you buy a new bike, You want to lube the chain every 2 weeks, probably, depending on, you know, if you're riding in nice weather, every 2 weeks. Keep the tires inflated because that's going to make it a better ride for you. And if it gets dirty, like your car, clean it off. And if you've got to use a bucket of water and Dawn soap, that's perfect. Rinse it off after you're done. We're not a big proponent of taking it to the car wash because you could blow out the grease and the bearings and stuff like that. But we like to be proactive on maintenance. And if you, any of our customers who have questions, we bring it in. Let's look at it. Let's see what you need to get done.
Ben's knowledge of bicycles comes from decades as a cyclist. Ben says he started racing bikes 23 years ago and even spent some time as a cycling instructor. He says he loves the sport, which he finds addicting, and he continues to race today. Ben belongs to the Dixon Street Cycling Club, which is sponsored by Snapple.
Racing bikes are kind of like bowling. There's a huge pro circuit not a lot of people know about. But actually, Northwest Arkansas and Oklahoma and Southern Missouri and Kansas have a huge racing scene, like Texas. You don't get to see it every day in the newspaper or anything like that, but within a four-hour drive of Fayetteville, you can easily, I used to do 30 races a year within a four-hour drive of Fayetteville. So Little Rock, Tulsa, Kansas City, all those areas. And if you can do even more, you're driving to Dallas, which is, you know, a little bit longer. But huge opportunity to race. And that's been my driving factor, but most people don't race. But I will say this about Northwest Arkansas, if you're not a racer, it has the best system of county roads that are paved with little traffic. I've lived in Fort Smith, Little Rock, Southern Mississippi. This is the best cycling environment ever. We haven't even talked about mountain bikes. I'm mainly talking about road bikes. Great mountain biking also, but I think with all that and this move away from being in the gym to being outside and being active and doing triathlons and running, you know, the cycling element of that has taken off hugely.
The Hike or Bike Against Hunger event to benefit Life Source International is scheduled for 8 to 10:30 a.m. September 14th at Panera Bread in Fayetteville. Breakfast will be provided by Panera, and the bike route is donating a bike to be raffled off at the event. For registration or more information, you can visit lifesourceinternational.org. If you'd like more information on the bike route, visit facebook.com/thebikeroute. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The restaurant experience generally follows a simple, familiar procedure. Examine the menu, place an order, wait for the food. The rest is left to the people in the kitchen. For one night this summer, though, about a dozen patrons at The Hive, the restaurant inside the 21C Hotel, did something a little different. They went into the kitchen.
This is what you're doing here. What are we dividing it into?
So I'm basically taking the belly and separating the belly and the loin.
Matthew McClure is the executive chef at The Hive. He's standing behind a long table, knives in hand. Tonight, the chef is offering a peek behind the culinary curtain. Over the next 30 minutes or so, he, along with his sous chef Dan, will cut meat from the bone.
We've got a whole Berkshire hog that we're going to be breaking down today. We're not going to go through like everything we're going to do with every little piece, but we're going to sort of section it out. We'll just discuss what we usually do with the different pieces.
The hog comes from a farm just across the state border in southern Missouri. It's already been eviscerated, hung, and had the head removed. And it's been divided into halves.
So, yeah, this is the way it comes. It comes split in half with the head off. We do have the head in the walk-in.
Culinary workshops like this are an occasional outing in downtown Bentonville, designed to let people learn more about their food and the people who prepare it. Chef Matt shows the cuts he makes, explaining anatomy, cooking, and the restaurant business along the way. He says almost every bit of this pig will be used.
Where we would use the shoulder, and then the racks where the pork chops come from, the ribs were actually, you know, most people now aren't serving ribs from these because they use the pork belly for bacon or pancetta or whatever. So we don't really do much with the ribs besides make stock out of it. So from here to here, shoulder, we've got the trotter that we usually cut fairly high because we stuff it to put on the butcher plate.
Plus porterhouse, pork chops, and more. Different cuts of meat are placed on different trays. The cuts take about 30 to 45 minutes in a usual setting, and Matthew says the kitchen staff at the Hive does this, on average, once or twice a month. He says there is no particular time of day that's better for this sort of operation than another, though it helps if it isn't a terribly busy night, since the pig does require some amount of room. He says one of the benefits a kitchen gains by getting a pig like this is the ability to make custom cuts.
You know, if I wanted to do a pork chop, you know, and leave the bone on, have like the super dramatic, you know, pork rack, Fred Flintstone style. Like, I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that unless I butchered the animal myself.
The Hive makes its own bacon. In fact, temporary menu items can be created in the restaurant based on what the chef decides to do with a pig like this. He says the pig is cut, then certain items can be added to the menu almost immediately. The kitchen staff takes turns butchering throughout the year, though Chef Matthew says it's not seen as a chore, but as a way to connect with what got many of them into the business in the first place.
You know, this is really what it's all about. I mean, this is real food from, you know, start to finish. And, you know, you can go buy a steak and you can throw it on the grill and it's, you know, enjoy that and it's delicious and all, but, you know, this is really cooking. That is, you know, skipping a few steps.
Some of this meat could be on plates as early as the next morning. The shoulder cuts, for example, could be breakfast sausage. Pork chops can be on the menu the night after the process, after they've been brined for about 12 hours. Other cuts and meats, like the bacon and the ham, will take longer to go from kitchen to customer. Matthew McClure says almost all of the meat will be on the menu. He says that's the only way to make this kind of preparation economically feasible.
The savings is only there if you use everything efficiently. You know, because you're paying for skin, you're paying for fat, you're paying for head, for feet, for everything. So if you think you're just going to sell some pork chops on it and all will be well, you're mistaken. You have to really use everything.
Later, after the session in the kitchen was over, many who watched the process stayed for a drink in the Hive's lounge. Michael Cohen drove to Bentonville from Fayetteville to, as he describes it, watch and learn.
A perspective of scale. I wanted to be able to do this to a deer. I want to do this to a pig. I want to be able to do this to a cow. So a little lesson on the basic anatomy of an animal.
He says during the 30 minutes or so he was in the kitchen, he picked up plenty of valuable tips. And even if most of us do, as the chef says, skip some steps when we eat that steak or the pork, there are lessons that can be learned. Robert Depper, another of the guests in the kitchens, says even if he won't be cutting the next pork chop he eats, it's worth remembering how food gets on his plate.
Having a connection to your food, I mean, like, recognizing that, you know, it's one thing to eat a pork chop and it's just kind of a commodity. It's kind of a thing like any other bauble on the shelf. But you start seeing legs and a head and that, I mean, our lives require lives.
It was also Robert Depper, who made the trip to 21C from Fayetteville, who, during the butchering session, asked the chef the question that everybody else wanted to ask.
You said you had the head back there. What do y'all use that for?
We usually make kind of an Italian version of head cheese, where the skull is actually boned out and removed, and that's rind and cured, and then for several days, and then rolled and poached. So it's like this giant roulade. And then we shave it super thin and put it on our butcher plate.
And for the record, Chef Matthew says using very sharp knives and answering questions from strangers is not dangerous for a professional.
I've broken down enough pigs that not like I could do it with my eyes closed, but I'm really comfortable about where the knife needs to go at the right time. And hopefully I can concentrate enough to answer a question while doing that.
Matthew McClure is the executive chef at The Hive, the restaurant inside 21C in downtown Bentonville. He led a program about preparing pork inside his kitchen this summer. It is Thursday, September 5th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Joining us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It is the first ever Hay Days, and it includes food, music, and little short-legged dogs running. This is a new, okay, the weenie dog race is not true, not new.
Right.
The Bella Vista Heydays is a sort of an expansion that starts tomorrow with a Bratfest.
Okay.
I think I have to go.
All right.
Right now? Are you going to wait for the brats?
I'm going to wait for the dogs and the brats.
Okay. That's sponsored by the Bella Vista Sunrise Rotary Club. And then there's two music performances, Joe Giles and the Homewreckers and Michelle McBride tomorrow night. And then on Saturday, music starts about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and concludes with headliners Lee and the Mojo Doctors at 8. And in between, there are weenie dog races that benefit the Bella Vista Animal Shelter. And all this happens on the fairgrounds where you expect to go to the crafts fair in Bella Vista. And it's all free.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the next Radio Lab. Colors. When two people look at a rainbow,
do you see some of the pink in the blue?
Do they see the same thing?
See, I see a lot of pink. Like, do you see that?
No. All the Greeks were colorblind.
All of them were colorblind?
Yes. They saw the world in black and white, maybe with a touch of red.
Join us for Radiolab.
You can listen to Radiolab this Saturday at noon here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The AMP Arkansas Music Pavilion presents Alabama Shakes tomorrow night. This retro soul band offers a mix of rock and alternative music. Gates open at 6 p.m., music at 7:30. Tickets and more information available at amptickets.com or 443-5600. The Fayetteville Underground presents America in Motion, photographs by artist Terry Duchon, plus an installation from artist Jean Vacroth. That's this week from 5 until 8:30 during First Thursday on the Square in downtown Fayetteville. That's tonight. More information available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Wow. So we've got First Thursday tonight, First Friday in Slaughter Pen in Bentonville tomorrow.
And is there something in Bella Vista
I'm
also?
I'm sure there is. Yeah. I'm sure there is. And you also have the Alabama Shakes tomorrow night at the AMP and a lot of other things. I'm going to The Spiritualist tonight, the Theater Squared production. Bought my tickets today. There aren't many left for tonight, if any, by now. Tickets are going very well for this original production, this world premiere.
Right. Written by Robert Ford.
That is correct.
Right. And I'm going to go to the Alabama Shakes tomorrow night.
Should be a lot of fun. Should be a good crowd, too.
I hope so.
I don't know how many tickets are left for that either. But,
I don't either. I have no
but
idea.
I think you're going to see a lot of people there.
Right.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I should do the legal ID.
You should. Okay. I was waiting for you to do that.
That's right. That was my job. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Eureka Springs.
Right. I'm sure there's something going on in Eureka Springs this weekend, too.
Oh, there's always something going on in Eureka Springs. I do want to remind you that Rogers Little Theater presents The Wizard of Oz by L. Frank Baum. Performances September 13th through the 29th. The production is based upon the classic motion picture, Flying Monkeys. I've seen pictures. They will have actual flying monkeys.
Real monkeys?
No.
Okay.
They will be flying. I mean, I think they're doing some harness
work. People in
costume. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So actually, when I say actual flying monkeys, that was a bit of an exaggeration.
Right.
But what I meant was there will be people, actors, doing harness work over the stage. That's what the pictures I've been led to believe. So that's exciting. Would you, for a production, would you fly above a stage?
Sure.
Would you? Well, you jumped out of a plane.
I know, that's what I was going to say.
Of course you would.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
I don't think I would. Not that I've been asked, but I don't think I would. All right.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
I'll be with Antoinette Grajeda tomorrow for a brand new edition of the Daily Program at noon.
And then we'll be back together Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Yes, we will.
All right. Thanks so much for listening and have a good Thursday.